This program is brought to you by Stanford on iTunes U at Stanford University. Please visit us at itunes.stanford.edu.
Hi, my name is Cindy Pearson, and I work at the Stanford Alumni Association. I'd like to welcome you to our second book of the 2007-2008 Stanford Book Salon season, The Shadow of the Wind by Carlos Ruiz Zafón. Our faculty host for this month is Tamar Herzog, a professor of Latin American and Spanish history. Tamar has taught at Stanford since 2005. Her work centers on the relationship between Spain and Spanish America and the ways by which Spanish society changed as a result of its involvement in a colonial project. She is the author of Upholding Justice, State Law and the Penal System in Quito, and Defining Nations, Immigrants and Citizens in Early Modern Spain and Spanish America, as well as numerous other books. She's currently working on a new project regarding the right to land and territorial claims in the early modern period. For our November Book Salon selection, Tamar has chosen a novel by a Spanish author that topped bestseller lists around the world. Thank you, Tamar, for agreeing to launch the discussion of The Shadow of the Wind for our Book Salon audience. Let's start with our first question. Can you tell us about some of the issues from the book that you've singled out for readers that they might find interesting to discuss?
Thank you. I think one of the things that I saw in the book, now that I was rereading it to come here today, is a sentence on page 209, if any is interested, that says that you only see in books what you have inside you. And I think this is a bit my feeling about this book, particularly as I was reading it and rereading it for today. I think this book is the story of the growing up of both the person, Danielle, the narrator, and a country. It's a very, very slow story that spans over half of a century. But it really takes place eventually in the 50s and 60s when Spain starts to wake up after years of severe repression and poverty, leading to the revolt of the 60s and democracy of the late 70s. And this probably has to do with the question of what people need to know in order to read this book, which is another question I was asked. I think it's vital to remember the history of Spain during this period. Spain suffered a horrible civil war between 1936 and 1939 that started with the uprising of the military against the democratically elected leftist governments. The war ended in 39, huge destruction, huge cost in human life. Now we know that both sides were equally violent and equally vile in the process. And in 39, Francisco Franco became dictator of Spain, and he ruled Spain until 1975, when Juan Carlos became king of Spain, gradually distanced himself from Franco and channeled Spain through a peaceful transition to democracy. In 76, Spaniards were asked if they wanted democracy. 94% said yes. 1977, the first elections to a constitutional parliament, 78, a new constitution, and then the first really democratic elections. So this is a story, again, of a person growing up, a child, Danielle, but also of a country. And I think for me it's a story about remembrance and forgetfulness. It's all about what is memory, both in a society but also in the lives of people. So this is the theme, I think. And it is, again, a theme that is crucial to Spanish history, because after all this was over with and democracy returned to Spain, there was a big debate about what to do with the past. And basically there was a pact of silence. Spaniards decided not to discuss nor the civil war, nor the horrors of the civil war, nor the horrors of the dictatorship, because certainly there was a huge amount of repression, especially in the 40s and 50s. There were guerrilla groups. There was just general repression of everybody. And it's only in the last 10 years, and I think this book forms part of it, that Spaniards have begun to rediscuss what the war was about, whether there were good people, bad people. Everybody was bad, everybody was good. What a dictatorship was about. What do you remember? What do you forget? What are you allowed to do? Perhaps because they felt it was no longer dangerous the way it was when the transition to democracy just happened. So I think this book actually engages in this debate that perhaps to those who don't know Spanish history, it's not as evident. And there are a lot of passages there that speak not only about the conditions in Spain during this period, poverty, misery, repression, and so forth, but also really about the question, how do we remember the Civil War? It's actually mentioned there a few times. There's a conversation between Daniel and his father about whether he should tell him what happened or not, how we remember the Franco years, but also how we remember individuals. Because on another level, for me, this is a book about what can be forgotten, what can't be forgotten. And the other main character in the book, Julian, is actually somebody who can't forget, but also can't be forgotten. He lives in the past, in his memories, but he also keeps on living in his books, which is where his soul is, so says the author. And because people remember his books, this is what keeps him alive. And in a certain moment, he wants to be forgotten, and he physically destroys all his books, and nevertheless, he's still remembered. He's almost doomed to be remembered and live in his memories. And the story of this book is actually how Daniel resuscitates him and brings him back to life from the depth of his memories. So I think it is about personal memories, it's about the memories of country, and it's in general about loss and abandonment as well as encounters. I think loss and abandonment is everywhere in the book. Daniel loses his mother, he loses his friend Tomás, his Clara, Julian loses Penelope, loses his mother, loses his friend Miquel. But not only people are lost, also things, books are abandoned, houses are abandoned, but there are also discoveries and encounters, and they're all presented as mysteries, as something surprising that you never expect. So I think, for me, this is really what the book is about, and I think these are the themes that should be considered. And I think also as an author, the whole question of how much we control our works once it leaves our desk is an interesting question. And I think it's also a question that haunts this book. How people use our work, what they remember of it, can it be forgotten, the power that the written word has that goes beyond us. All these kind of questions, I think, are really intriguing for me.
Yeah, wow. That's a lot to think about as folks are reading this book. Thank you. Let's move on to our next question, which you alluded to a little bit before, and I'm sure you have a little more to say about. What might readers be interested in knowing about this book? Are there questions they might be asking themselves as they read it?
I think basically, as far as information one needs to know, is that I think on another level, this is really a love song to Barcelona, to the city of Barcelona, mm-hmm. which is really an amazing city. It's certainly one of the best. Some people say the best in Spain, in Europe, I don't know. And I think once you read this book, you can feel as if you're walking in the streets of Barcelona, and you can feel the love of the author to Barcelona. Barcelona, that he says, is now in ruins. It's what is remained of its civilization. It's no longer there, which I think is a very interesting question, why somebody who writes about Barcelona writes in such, on the one hand, loving terms, on the other hand, terms of abandonment. I wonder, but I'm not sure whether it has anything to do with the big debate about nationalism in Spain and the fact that Barcelona wants so much to separate this from Spain, but at the same time doesn't want to at all. And there's a whole question of whether nationalism does well to Barcelona or not. I think similar debate like took place with Quebec in Canada and Montreal especially. So I think this is one thing that perhaps is relevant to the book, but I'm not that certain. The other thing, of course, is what I mentioned about the civil war, the dictatorship, and the question of how you manage memory in Spain. And actually, this is such a permanent question in Spain that these very days they are debating in the parliament a law that is called the Law of Memory, and it's precisely about what is going to be remembered on the level of the state, what is going to be commemorated, which holidays should be on the calendar, which holidays shouldn't be on the calendar. Yeah. And so much of it has to do with the memory of the Civil War. And people are still debating, even today, how to present the different sides. This is on one level. On the other level, of course, now they're discovering that the Franco family had amassed huge fortunes during his dictatorship because he got all these voluntary gifts for people from people who were very afraid and wanted to please him. And there's a whole question what to do with it. And the Franco family insists that it's private property. And the state is trying to get in and say not quite. It was, you know, lands were taken away from poor peasants in order to give it as a present to the dictator. Perhaps it should be brought back to the people. So I think basically these two issues, perhaps nationalism in Spain and the role of Catalan nationalism in Barcelona, and civil war dictatorship and the question of memory in present-day Spain.
Great, thank you. Okay, finally, will you share a passage with us that you consider representative of the writings in this book and talk to us about why you chose it?
Yeah, actually, it's not completely representative. But for me, perhaps because of my own story, as I said, you see in books what you have inside you. Perhaps these are some of the themes that really intrigued me that go beyond the history of Spain, that are much more universal. So this is why I wanted to share them. And the passage I chose is from page 21. Should I read it?
Yes.
So this is Clara Barceló speaking to Daniel. And she explains, her father, a prominent lawyer linked to the Catalan president Cabinet, had had the foresight to send his wife and daughter to the other side of the border at the start of the Civil War. Some considered his fear exaggerated and maintained that nothing could happen in Barcelona. In Spain, both the cradle and the pinnacle of Spanish civilization, barbarism was for anarchists, those people who rode bicycles and wore darned socks. And surely they wouldn't get very far. But Clara's father believed that nations never see themselves clearly in the mirror, much less when war preys on their minds. He had a good understanding of history and knew that the future could be read much more clearly in the streets, factories, and barracks than in the morning press. For months, he wrote a letter to his wife and daughter once a week. At first, he did it from his office on Calle de Diputación. But later, his letters had no return address. In the end, he wrote secretly from a cell in Montjuïc Castle, into which no one saw him go, and from which, like countless others, he would never come out. So why this paragraph? I think it brings out a question that really interests me as a person, but also as a historian, about our desperate attempts to know what's going to happen and to plan our lives accordingly. The question of where would we be safer? Where would we be happier? I think is a question that is on our minds either constantly or almost constantly. And how little we know. How little we can imagine even what the future will bring. And actually, I've heard my grandparents speak about a similar scenario in Poland before Second World War, in which they were discussing with their family whether they would be safer in Warsaw, where they knew everybody, they had properties, they lived forever, or in Palestine, which was really a desolate place at the time, and they couldn't agree, and each went his way, and eventually history told us which one was safer. But I think there really wasn't a way to know or to imagine which would be safer. But people ask these questions. So for me, this is a page about that. And I think the book in general, and this is what I think is perhaps representative about this page, has also another issue that I find very interesting, which is the nature of evil. Because we do have in this book somebody who's definitely evil, Inspector Fumaro. And this is another question that comes up in history, but also personally, whether people are bad or whether circumstances make them bad. And this is one of the big debates we have today, again, about the Second World War. How did people come to commit these atrocities? Is it because they were meant to, they had something in them? Or is it the situation and the circumstances around them that allowed them to drift in this way? What war does to individuals? And I think it's also relevant here. I mean, sometimes when we hear about what happens in Iraq in terms of US soldiers who humiliate prisoners, and you wonder how this transformation happens, or perhaps it's not a transformation. For me, this is another message of this book that constantly engages with the issue of how do you know the future, how do you know what people are like, and how can you tell what's going to happen? And I think you don't. And perhaps this is what makes us be able to live a life that we, unless there is a disaster like a civil war or the Holocaust, you never know whether the decision you made was right or not. And you never know whether you could be happier somewhere else.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much for introducing this book to our Book Salon community. It's nice to have you here. Great.
The preceding program was brought to you by Stanford on iTunes U and is copyrighted by the Board of Trustees of the Leland Stanford Junior University. Please visit us at itunes.stanford.edu.